Welcome, everybody, to episode 58 of the Worldwide Knicks podcast after an extended all-star break. You know, we took a couple weeks off, back to talk some more Knicks, full squad in-house tonight. Omar here with Rafa and Alex. Hope you guys enjoyed 2 weeks of not talking on this podcast about the Knicks, even though it's been a good 2 weeks, right? You know, the team's been doing really well. So how are you guys doing tonight?
Yeah, I'm good, Omar. Thanks. I'm just hoping we're not us recording. It's not the jinx that sends it the other way, since we haven't stopped winning ever since we took some time off. So
it could be the problem.
Why even bring that up? That possibility. Why?
It's negative energy, right?
It's just, yeah. I'm drinking today, and I'm drinking wine because I'm happy with the Knicks. I'm enjoying the Knicks, and. You just
reminded me of that Jalen Brunson, Julius Randle press conference moment, Rafa, where JB was being interviewed and Julius like, "Hey man, you want some wine?" And then he's like, "No, I'm good." And then he just walks away. The vibes are great with this team, but let's jump into it. You know, since we last spoke, the Knicks have won a bunch of games, 8-game winning streak, but 7 in a row since we last recorded. So that's wins against the Nets twice, the Hawks, the Wizards, the Pelicans, the Celtics, and just the other night against the Miami Heat in South Beach. So a lot of winning going on right now, a lot of positivity going on around this team. So like I said, they won 8 in a row. So what would you guys think or say is the most important part of this winning streak as has been going on? What's been like the biggest factor?
I think it's just like the team's so together just now. You can see how much they love playing with each other. And confidence just makes that build more and more. You know, you get on a bit of momentum, you get a few wins together, and you can just see the camaraderie between the players. And, you know, even when they're down, down in the game, you know, they can see they've got that belief. They know that they can come back. You know, the heads never seem to drop, you know, and whether that's just, you know, we've got a roster together where the players just click, or, you know, whether, you know, that comes from the coach, it's hard to tell, but it's just so fantastic to see, you know, and there's really nothing better in sports than when you have a team on a roll and you just feel like you can beat anybody, you know. It's just fantastic. So also staying healthy has been good, even though, you know, Brunson's out tonight, apparently. But, you know, the kind of key pieces like Brunson and Randle have been, you know, healthy and rolling. So that could be a decider for tonight. But hopefully they can, I'm assuming quickly will step in to take out the majority of those minutes. So. Yeah, let's see how it goes.
Well, it's hard not to say Josh Hart. Guy, he didn't lose as a Knick, and he seemed to really come. Picking on Alex's point about the team, really, they look like a team. They're playing together, they're having fun while playing together, and Josh Hart really came in and looks like a guy who's was a perfect fit for this team, and doesn't seem bothered coming off the bench. It's the best thing we had since acquiring him was the first unit kept playing well with Brunson and Randall especially, but the second unit, while playing with Josh Hart, improved a lot as well. It took a lot of pressure there, especially defensively from the guys. He's an amazing, huge upgrade from Deuce McBride on both ends of the floor, and especially on offense. It takes he shares the load with RJ and Quickly, and so it's really an improvement, right? It's a worth first round pick to give up if this is the type of play he will bring to the Knicks and will continue to bring to our team. So ecstatic, the change of a fortune with the Knicks after it was a little, we don't know what we are, especially we're now, I think we're a playoff team, a sure playoff team playing like this. There's no way, fingers crossed, there's no way the Knicks fucked it up. Even with injuries, even if Brunson is out a game or two, or Randall is out a game or two, I know now, I believe that the rest of the team will pick up the slack, because especially since the All-Star break, we have been playing. Team knows who the top two guys offensively are with Brunson and Randall, and the others know what their moments are to take over the game. And so, feels everything is clicking on defense, on offense, which is amazing. We were discussing this right before we started the pod, is we're one of the best offenses in the league, while still being coached by Tom Thibodeau. I apologize, Mr. Thibodeau, for all the disrespect.
Yay, there we are.
Alex was like hunched over, waiting for it, waiting for it, waiting for it, and there it was.
I mean, he can still be a war criminal sometimes, but he's our war criminal. I mean,
There you go. There you
let's
go.
just say it like this.
Yeah,
To
I'll
you, Alex.
He's a nice war criminal.
There you go. Yeah, it's
He's
yeah, I've never
smiling.
heard
He's
smart
smiling.
guy. One of the
One
best war criminals out, man. He's just
of
top notch, man. Top notch criminal.
Speaking of war criminals, sorry. If this guy picks up the gun again, give me a heads up. This is Ja
Oh,
Morant,
Ja,
so
yeah. Ooh,
I'm a
yeah,
little
that's
bit
totally
scared to
point at
know.
Umar there.
Yeah.
Sorry, no.
Yeah,
This
it is
one
John
right here.
Morant. Yeah, you might need to retire the Funko Pop if he might be playing in Taiwan with Dwight Howard pretty soon. So, you don't want that. But for me, guys, it's really just shot making, right? Like just elite shot making from Brunson and Randle in the starting unit, especially. Grimes has been hitting shots, RJ getting more success at the rim as well. And of course, Quickley has just been hitting everything lately. It seems like we almost expect him to score 20 off the bench now, which is crazy. And Josh Hart is the catalyst there, of course. He's been hitting shots. And that was a funny thing too, if you guys remember, when the trade was happening, people were like, oh, he's so afraid to take threes now in Portland. He's lost confidence in his shot. Well, he doesn't really seem to lose any confidence in it as soon as he got to MSG. So he's been a catalyst for the second unit. We're seeing a lot of just better play. Now, granted, this team is still a very isolation heavy team because you have two isolation scorers. I think they're second in the league behind Dallas in ISO plays. So, that's what you're going to have to live with. It's going to be a lot of Julius, RJ, Jalen, ISOs here and there, and that's just going to be what it is. But, it's working right now. They're making shots. They're hitting shots, and they're defending well. So you can't really complain when the shots are going in, right? What's up, Alex?
No, I was just going to pick up on the ISO point. We've talked before about how, it seems like a kind of dirty word, but ISO play is a bit misunderstood. It's seen as a kind of play for a kind of ball hog and somebody that's, but that can be somebody that's taken account of, taking advantage of mismatches, and Randall especially is somebody that has so many mismatches that he can take advantage of just with his strength and his power. He overdoes it at times, but he's also very, very successful at it. And I think even Brunson's had a bit of criticism about dribbling too much and this and the other, but you're like he's one of the best finishers in the paint in the league. So you're like, why wouldn't he?
You
It's
see the efficiency, right? And you're just like, how can you criticize it? When he's dropping 30 whatever on Brooklyn and going, what was it, like 14 of 19 from the field or something like that? Like, how do you criticize that? It's impossible. Like I said, the shots are going in.
But also, ISO play is also related to kind of playoff basketball, and that's something I've heard a few times lately. The Knicks are playing like a playoff team. That kind of intensity, that kind of just give it to the guy down the stretch, and to take you home sort of thing. That's what all teams do in the playoffs. So very much more of a half court game, and especially coming down those last few minutes. Every team ISOs. Maybe it's just a statement to the league. It's like, well, we're here for the playoffs. They're going to come in battle hardened by the time they get to the playoffs and know exactly how they want to play.
Even most of those games, like the Knicks, we against Brooklyn, for example, we were sharing the ball, passing the ball around, hitting shots. Every shot was going in from every part of the court. We were up 30. When you're up 30, normally when teams have a big lead, they revert to a slower-paced offense. And slower-paced offense is ISO. So we go into a lot of those ISO plays and Brunson, sometimes RJ as well. We revert that because we're leading so much, by so much. We said, okay, it's a slower pace, and guys don't get as tired at the end of regulation. Now we don't. How long have we been not talking about the guys that don't have any legs? They're tired. That's why we're losing. It's maybe that pace helps us as well maintain our energy levels higher.
Did you see Randall's interview after the Heat game, where he just
somebody asked him a question? Tired, didn't just know like, the question.
He was just like, "I'm sorry, I have no idea what you said."
I mean, he exerts so much energy, man. It's just it's ridiculous. And to your point, Alex, it's they're hunting matchups. They did it against Miami the other day against Gabe Vincent. You know, where they get a screen, get a switch. Julius is able to body up on him, or they get like a bigger defender to come on Jalen Brunson, and he has that quick first step and he's able to get by him. And it's just smart offense. You know, I know a lot of people, like you said, Alex, a good point, that a lot of people feel that ISO is a dirty word, but because they think of just like you just patting the ball down, clearing everybody out and doing whatever. But it's a little more strategic with the Knicks, you know, because, you know, both Brunson and Randall have shown a really good ability to pass out of situations once they get into the paint as well, which has, you know, opened up Grimes and RJ for a bunch of shots, or Mitchell Robinson for a bunch of lobs as well, which we've seen.
And you mentioned RJ and Grimes. They have, it's the unseen work they do. They normally move around a lot trying to get those advantages for the ISO or for Randall or for Brunson. A lot of screen setting, a lot of moving around, getting defenses a little bit lost. So that's a big part of the thing as well. And the other thing is how the NBA and how goes for assists. I mean, if Randall takes the last shot, there's a 24-second shot clock. If he takes 4 minutes of ISO because he got the ball, the post up and shot, that's an ISO play. That's not an assist. Like, obviously, Manuel quickly getting off the backboard to Julius Randall, that should be an assist, but it's not. So it's that. Those kind of things that throw off the metrics a little bit, because there's a lot of Knicks getting the ball around. But it's, since the guy is not ready for the shot, he needs to take another step or beat another defender. It's not an assist. It was an ISO. So it's a little bit misleading to me sometimes as well.
Yeah, that's a good point, Rafa. Now, let me ask you guys this. If you wanted to pinpoint like a player that's been most important to this run here, who would it be for you?
The sergeant.
I mean, I think the best thing I like to see, and the team gets compared to obviously the one from 2 years ago, because of the kind of run they're making. But a lot of that was basically on Randall's back. You know, he was carrying the whole team, and as we saw in the playoffs, when they shut down Randall, they basically shut down the team. So. But I like the way that, you know, either Randall or Brunson or both are, you know, bringing it every night, you know, that you have that, you know, if one of them's not playing quite so well, the other one steps up and fills in. So it's a hard one to separate the two of them, to be honest. I think they're almost coming as a pair just now. That I can't remember the last time when they both had a bad game, you know, and, you know, one of them's always kind of picking up the slack if the other one's not playing so well. So I just think, you know, if we could get RJ just a wee bit more consistent, a wee bit more like his old self, then just having that kind of third option again with the two of them so consistent, I think it's just, yeah, it's going to be hard to stop, you know.
Yeah, it's having Brunson and Randall at peak of form right now. Is okay. Oh, Randall had a rough start. Yeah, Brunson is nailing every shot. So okay, we need to. The defense from the other team needs to go tougher on Brunson, which opens up Randall and other guys, this Randall, to make his shots. I don't know what game was it. Randall was having a good game. Brunson was missing everything he was putting up. RJ was hitting a couple of shots as well. And little by little, Brunson ended up having his shots. Because, okay, Randall is hot. Let's double him. RJ is being able to penetrate and kick it out, so he's doing his job. Okay, so no one's guarding me right here, Jalen Brunson, the supposed the biggest snub in the All-Star game. Yeah, I'm here. I can still knock a few down if you give me the space. So he ended up with 30, I think, in that game after starting missing everything. So they will always find their base on offense to get to their levels of 20, at least 20 points per game, which is absolutely amazing. And it's a big part, right? Confidence, the shot is falling, everything is falling for both of them. It's the Julius Randle buzzer beater. I mean, he fumbled the ball once the pass from Brunson wasn't ideal, and still he still got it. It's confidence. That's, yeah, I'm taking this shot, I'm making this shot, there's nothing, no one can stop me. And that's the big thing here with the team, is 100% confidence and 100% they're focused every night, and they're building on top of that.
So to build on your confidence point, obviously the real answer is, of course, JB and Julius, but I'm going to throw a little bit of a different one out there too. Really think, you know, we got to give IQ some credit here. He's really stabilized. Like we were going through this entire season and we're saying, yeah, the starters are doing so good because of Jalen and Randall and RJ and whatever. But like, there's a little bit of a drop off at some points earlier in the year when the bench would come in. IQ now has solidified himself as a sixth man of the year candidate. You know, Green was advocating for him. Our friend of the pod, Mario, was talking about MSG propaganda, you know, with that. But you know, I mean, he hits these shots that it seems like when things are slowing down and teams are coming back in, and here comes IQ with a three here or a floater there or a good defensive play to really just kind of get the team back locked in, alongside with Josh Hart, obviously. But quickly has just really been on another level, and he's looked like in this winning streak a starting caliber player who plays off the bench, which is incredible to have, and he's been just lights out, you know, everything you want to do. A great spell for Brunson, and has played well with Brunson as well in off the ball capacity. So, you know, to me, I think, you know, a lot of credit needs to go to Julius and to Jalen, of course, but a lot of credit as well needs to be going to Emmanuel Quickley, with which in a lot of these games he's been the third best player on the team, you know. So so you can't say enough about what he's been doing. But
you know, some of our early criticism on this pod was to do with these kind of, you know, he lacked a kind of composure. He lacked, you know, just that calmness under pressure. And, you know, certainly I always kind of wondered, you know, everybody was so insistent on him becoming a point guard that I was like, I don't really see it, that kind of, say, you know, a point guard in this league to be really successful has to have that kind of composure under pressure. And I think this season he's been like a new player. He's been absolutely fantastic. It's so consistent again, which is something that we criticized him about. But I mean, that comes with age and experience, you know, and he's developed so well. Again, I don't like this kind of obsession with players that have to start. You know, I mean, he's absolutely excelling in his role, you know, he's getting the minutes, he's playing crunch time, you know, why try and change that? Why try and force something that, you know, doesn't need to happen, you know, if it's working this well. And he's clearly got a great relationship with Hart as well. So the two of them coming off the bench, a little bit like he had used to have with Rose, you know, that he just seems to click really well with certain players. So,
and the minutes thing too, Alex, that you were mentioning, I mean, he's at 28 minutes a game this year, you know, and, you know, some starters in the league play 30, you know, so it's not like he's not getting the opportunities. It just happens to be after 5-6 minutes in the first quarter and he comes in or something. So,
Well, like we talked with Obi, you know, the IQ's earned it. You know, he's shown absolutely no reason why he shouldn't have those minutes. You know, and that's a great trait to have. I think as a roster that you can see somebody that's worked that hard and worked in his game and developed his game, and now he's getting the rewards.
Since we're on this positive note, I would like to. I mean, he might not be the greatest player, but ever since Mitch went down, and now he's obviously coming back, Isaiah Hartenstein,
yes,
looks like a different player.
He's looked great.
He still misses those tip-ins like no one else. But his energy, his energy has been great, and that helps the second unit as well. And to your guys' point about Emmanuel Quickly, and when we changed that 9-man rotation and finally said, okay, this guy is out of the rotation, this guy is out, these are the ones moving forward. And even before Josh Hart came in, Quickly's play had been improving. Quickly with the second unit, with RJ and Deuce, Obi with Artenstein, they were building on it. They were improving. Some games, not so much, but they were improving. And Josh Hart bringing that stability to the second unit was massive for us, I think. And because now we know what's expected of those players, and IQ coming off the bench, well, just like Josh Hart, I feel like it's the perfect situation for the team. It's because IQ gets to play he's an ISO player as well, somewhat. Not as heavy, but he's an ISO player. And playing with the second unit, he can still get his share. You can still get him going. Because IQ's the type of guy, he doesn't get his shot going, he's not making anything. It's like he's shooting bricks. And he needs the
rhythm shooter,
that level. Yeah, he needs that rhythm. And since he gets to play with the second unit, get a feel of his offense, when the starters come back in, at least Brunson and Randall come back in playing with Quickly, Quickly's already warmed up to play. Quickly's a guy who I feel needs his shot to be going in, to be helpful or more helpful, not like Josh Hart. Josh Hart's not making a single point. He doesn't care. He's playing defense. He's up 30 diving for loose balls and getting out of the field to get the ball. That's his type of player. And so I think it's the perfect situation right there for everyone.
Yeah, it's you look at it, it's just kind of like Josh Hart's like that sort of player that Knicks fans just love, you know, that just all-out energy, aggressive type defender. You know, it's a reason why they loved Oakley in the 90s, you know, and Mason, you know, those type of guys who just get after it defensively and, you know, put the body on the line. But I do want to shift into one thing real quick here is, so now I think you mentioned this earlier, Rafa, how the solidified playoff position right now, you know, pretty locked in as of now into the 5 seed, might tempt Cleveland for the 4 seed when it's all said and done, which is an interesting storyline that's developing because, you know, what if it's a first round matchup between the Cavs and the Knicks, the team who got Donovan Mitchell, the team who didn't get him, that whole thing that ESPN is going to go crazy with. But if this team gets to the playoffs, that's how PTSD driven I am, you know, it's still an if, not a win. But if they get to the playoffs, what's the ceiling of this team? Is it still kind of like a first round exit, or do you guys think that maybe they could surprise a team?
No, they could definitely get out the first round. Well, first of all, I just want to make sure they get there. I mean, Miami are a constant worry, you know, just from their experience. And they've got some, you know, obviously Bam and Jimmy are fantastic players. And, you know, they've got some real experience. They've got an amazing coach, obviously, and just have that kind of that kind of confidence that they could make a run. As much as we clown in the Nets, you know, the Nets are picking up here and there as well. They're a bit inconsistent at the moment. They're absolutely smashing the Hornets at the minute, but
the Hornets.
I can't see them long term towards the end of the season staying up there. I mean, I'm sure they'll stay in a play-in position, but I think the sixth seed is, you know, looking pretty set at the moment. There's nothing wrong, obviously, with pushing on and trying to overtake the Cavs. I mean, There's been a lot of talk about, you know, what about that first round series against the Cavs, you know, the Donovan Mitchell and things. So that could be pretty tasty. But I like the matchup with them. You know, it could certainly nothing to fear there. And I feel the same about the Sixers as well. I don't fear the Sixers at all. You know, they've got a long history of, you know, bottling it in the playoffs. Embiid's obviously very up and down. You can get Embiid picks up injuries every 3 seconds. So, you know, I wouldn't fear that matchup. The only ones I would really fear are, you know, I think the Bucks would be a huge test for us. But the Celtics as well. I know we've obviously had success over the Celtics recently, but you know, a playoff 7-game series is a different beast. So, I think that would be a wee bit too far for us as well. But yeah, certainly that first round matchup I think could be really interesting. So certainly make a bit more of a game of it than 2 years ago. So
yeah, that's where I'm at. Even I think we can be a second round team. We can be a second round maybe if everything will aligns perfectly, squeak into the conference final. I think it's a bigger stretch, but even if we fell in the first round, it's I think we were going to go down swinging. I think I said it before, this team would go down swinging in the first round. I don't think anyone wants to pick the Knicks as their opponent. I know we're 9-1 or less 10 and still a few games, 20-ish games to go in the season. A lot can happen until then, but the team, the way the Knicks play and the aggressiveness we have, it's always our thing. It's not a team you want to face in the first round. Kind of like the Toronto Raptors, the style of play, that's not a team you want to face right from the get-go in the playoffs. And against your point, I would prefer to get the Cavs and get all that Donovan Mitchell thing and instead of the Sixers, just because the Sixers have James Harden and Joel Embiid. And it's not, I'm not afraid because they're the massive players that they are, but it's not because of that. It's playoffs, stars, foul merchant stars. It has the whole potential to be a foul fest and be a thing because those stars are more valued moving forward than the Knicks stars. It's a bit of complication there for me. I think we could match up well against them. We can match up well against any team, even against the Bucks. Obviously, the Bucks are the team to beat here. The Celtics as well, but more the Bucks and Giannis would go. Giannis is what's that phrase? You can only try to contain him.
Yeah,
there's no need to. No, you can't stop him. You can't stop him. You can try to slow him back, and you could be a tough matchup. For both teams, but looking at the playoff series, I mean, I'm pretty sure. I know it's crazy, but as a Knicks fan, I think my Knicks are going to the playoffs. Surely, it's like the Nets are the now. I think they're going to fall into a play-in spot. The Heat are really streaky right now. They win some, they lose a few in a row. It's a mess. The Hawks are another complete mess. And then there's the Raptors in 9th, the Wizards in 10th, the Pacers 11th, and the Bulls in 12th. I mean, the Bulls are 3-7 the last games. So they're so streaky, these teams in the East. I mean, this East looked so packed, but the last two, three weeks, so many teams just fell off a cliff in terms of play. Well, the Knicks went into the other direction, which is amazing. But I believe we're one of the teams in the playoffs. Fourth or fifth seed is our place. I don't think we're going any higher or any lower, to be fair, because the Heat or the Hawks will fight for that sixth playoff spot, and then the rest of them will be in the play-ins. But
and you know, I'm with you guys. I think that we can win a playoff series. I think back to 2 years ago, right, when you know we're entering the series against the Hawks, and feel like at the time we were all pretty confident. You know, we thought that, you know, we had beaten them during the regular season, and Of course, they keyed in on Julius. We didn't have Mitchell Robinson. There's a whole thing. But this year, it feels, I think we've said this throughout the year, guys, this feels a lot more sustainable. You have two scoring options now, and a third in RJ as well, and another viable option and quickly off the bench. You know, you've tightened up the rotation. You're not relying on heavy minutes from Derrick Rose. You don't have the albatross that is Elfrid Payton at the starting point guard spot. You know, it's a much different situation. And, you know, when I look at the matchups against Cleveland, you know, Donovan's been in the playoffs before in Utah. We know that. But the rest of the team's really young. You know, they got rid of their veteran presence in Kevin Love. I think that matters. You know, he's now in Miami. Garland hasn't really had an experience. Mobley doesn't have any experience. Jaren Allen has a little bit when he was with the Nets, but that inexperience, you know, could hurt. And Brunson has a bunch of it from his run with Dallas last year. So, and, you know, Julius and RJ and quickly have that experience of the Atlanta series of what not to do, right? You know, so they're able to kind of, you know, put that into a positive way. So if we're healthy, I think we could take the Cavs for sure. I'm with you, Rafa. I am not trying to see a 76ers series because it's going to be, to your point, just a bunch of foul baiting on both sides, if we're being honest. Julius and Brunson foul bait as well, you know, so it's not going to be, you know, a fun aesthetic series as a basketball fan. But do I think we can beat the Sixers? Yeah, I think we can. You know, they've, to your point, Alex, they've not shown themselves to be reliable in the playoffs. Harden and Embiid, both. Maxie hasn't proved anything. Tobias Harris hasn't done anything in the playoffs in this league. You know, so, yeah. What's that?
Doc Rivers as well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, as the one title, of course. But, yeah, yeah. There's that reputation that he has now, right?
He had at the Clippers, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, where he just can't figure it out. And yeah.
I think that
– Go ahead.
Go ahead. Right. Finish up. Sorry.
No, I'm good.
No, I'm just – I think it sums up this Knicks thing is 2 years ago, we said it a bunch of times. We are overachieving. We didn't belong here. So be grateful.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't feel like we're overachieving being in the 50s.
Yeah.
Bit. It doesn't feel like that one bit. So I think we are exactly where we belong. Obviously, the beginning of the season, we didn't think we would be this good. Especially because we didn't think that Julius Randle can be even better than he was 2 years ago. That's the main focus right here. And no one expected Jalen Brunson to be this good.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's an improvement. Yes, but not this type of improvement. So we quickly transformed into being a team that is where it belongs. We're a playoff team right now. Not overachieving.
So we'll see what happens, of course. And you mentioned it just now. A big part of that was Julius Randle's play. Potential, another All-NBA berth, maybe. You know, I mean, he got another All-Star. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. I want to talk a little bit about the game winner he had against the Heat the other night, which was of so much satisfaction to me as somebody who grew up watching all those Heat-Knicks series in the late 90s with Sprewell and Houston and Ewing. So that was beautiful to see on Miami's home floor that they had to rename because their sponsor went out of business. And I just love dumping on the Heat. I can't stand them, you know. So I know we've kind of talked about this offline about the team, the rival that like we kind of hate the most. And you know, for me, it's always been Miami. So it was nice to see that. But just kind of recapping how that happened, you were talking about earlier, Rafa. You know, Jalen kind of throws kind of a bad pass to Julius. He gathers it. Butler's all over him, and he almost loses it again, gets it back, sidestep, step back three, over Tyler Hero, splash, you know, 1 second left on that, and they couldn't get a playoff, and, you know, game over. So a great moment. You know, it's always great to see a shot like that. You know, you harken back to the RJ shot last year, and, you know, shots have happened throughout Knicks history. So my first question to you guys about this is, does this shot mean anything, or is it just kind of like, oh, this is a cool moment to happen in the regular season?
No, I think these things are important in a way of just continuing that kind of confidence building, just kind of making a statement, you know. And you can see the, you know, as Randle hit that shot, you know, he kind of had arms up in the air, you know, the whole team's kind of gathering around him just from a kind of statement as a kind of leadership role kind of idea, just bringing the whole team around him. I think, you know, these kind of things are important. Brunson's had a couple throughout the year that he's not made. You know, I'd really like to see him get something, you know, just get him that moment. Not that he needs confidence or anything, but it'd just be kind of nice to see. I think his play's been so outstanding this year, just to have that kind of statement moment.
It was a statement win to me, as it's against a team you're fighting for the playoffs, and you mm-hmm. got it's a, how many games we have on him, four or three games, instead of having just one. We've added to that lead to sustain our playoff position. But more importantly, how many close games did we lose up until now? Mm-hmm. How many close games, the last shot or the last missed plays and bad defense or whatever, how many of those games that we lost? And we got this. We got this one. We're like, yeah, we did it. Yeah. And Julius Randle getting it, because there's a few people on Twitter joke around it. It's Julius Randle in buzzer beaters or game winning shots, is our last second shots in the end of quarters. It's not a very good number for him. So him getting that shot is like, this is it. We can win these close games against playoff teams and their own court. So, I mean, for me, the most important thing is being able to finish a game like this and win it. Not going into overtime, just at the tying dunk, not losing a game. Ah, so close. We lost it. No, we won it, and we can do it again. It's building on the confidence.
Do you know the Spo called that a kind of lucky shot and all that? And that kind of annoyed me a little bit, because
disrespectful.
But that's a shot that Randall been hitting all game, do you know, from that kind of position. You know, that's not unusual. Yeah, that's his spot. And he hit it over Hero, I think, who not a defender at all. He didn't even have his hands up, I don't think. And, you know, yeah, it was a little bit lucky the way the ball kind of ricocheted back to him instead of going out of bounds. But, you know, it happened. But the actual shot itself, you know, is, you know, a shot that he hits all the time while he has
it's
been.
It's the shot he wanted. He ended up fumbled the ball and still got it. I mean, and to the point about Tyler Hero, I mean, if he commits too much, that's an easy foul. So he was like, okay, I'm here. I'm here. I mean, if I go too much, I can foul him. I mean, well, let him take it. It's,
I mean, the way the Knicks been shooting free throws, that might not have been a terrible strategy.
That's the thing, man. The free throws, that's still a thing of concern.
Also, as I said, sorry, Omar, just to say that the defending by the Heat in the last 5 minutes or so was spectacular, you know, and the fact that, again, that we can go up against defenses like that, looking ahead to the playoffs and, you know, come through it, is, you know, testament to the team. So Butler especially was just phenomenal.
All over him, yeah.
Considering he's putting up 30-odd points at the other end, to still have that intensity, you know, that stage it's of the game is just incredible.
Jimmy,
you know?
Butler.
Love Jimmy. I would love to have him on the Knicks at some point, but I think that ship sailed.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to wax poetic here for a second, guys. This 100% is a big deal for Julius.
I'm ready.
Not so much, yes, it's a great win for the team and improves great playoff positioning. We know all that. But for Julius himself, I think this is a massive, massive moment, because he came into this year doubted by the fan base. Everybody's talking about trading for a second-round pick. You know, everybody was saying, you know, he's not that guy. He's never been that guy. He's just somebody who can kind of win a game here and there. But, you know, he's not the player for the future. He's not our guy. We got to get rid of him. We got to draft the next guy. We got to trade him for the next superstar. We got to do all this stuff, right? And, you know, it's kind of RJ's getting that treatment now too, right? You know, but Julius got it for a year straight, got it all offseason. Even at the beginning of the year, people were doubting it. And the only time he's ever hit a game winner was a meaningless preseason game against the Wizards, you know, mm-hmm. and to see him be able to kind of overcome that, overcome great defense by Jimmy Butler. And, you know, I mean, I don't know what much more Tyler Hero could have done, maybe put his hands up, but, you know, it was great defense by the Heat overall, you know, to recover, and him recovering the ball and the pass before it was classic, emblematic of Julius, I think. Right? It's flawed. It's not pretty. It's not, you know, it's not perfect, right? It's not Carmelo Anthony, you know what I mean? But it's, you know, he's the guy who's been here for 3 years now. He's put in the work. He's a two-time All-Star as a Knick, and he's showing, and it showed him that, yes, you can make this shot. Yes, you can lead this team to victory against a real good team, not against a tanking team like the Pistons or the Magic or whatever, or the Rockets. Like, this is a team who is trying to win games. This is a team who wants to get into the playoffs, who's in win now mode with Jimmy Butler and Bam. So I was really happy for him. You know, I was happy to see, obviously you guys know Julius, my favorite Knick, but I was happy to see him make the shot, to take the shot and not, and have his team trust him. Like, you could have easily manufactured that play to get it to Brunson and let Brunson make the decision, even though Randle had 40 already, but they didn't. They trusted Julius, and they put the ball into Julius's hands, and he delivered. And he showed them that they can trust him. And I think that builds up the confidence, to your point, Rafa, that when he's in that moment in the playoffs, that he'll feel empowered to take that shot again and hopefully make that shot again, right? So, yeah, to me, it's like everybody, like Fred Katz is talking about the vibes being immaculate or whatever. And it is, you know, and, you know, everybody just kind of bum rushing him after that. The guy knocks over Tibbs, you know, and I don't know if you guys saw that, where he just bum rushed Tibbs in his excitement. And last thing is, when he put the arms up, I don't know if it was only me or maybe because I have this picture on my wall over here. It reminded me of Ewing in the playoffs that one time where he put his arms up in front of the Garden. So that way, I think that was Julius's signature Knick moment. And, you know, happy for him. He's worked hard for it. He's taken a lot of criticism.
He needed a moment like that.
Yeah.
He needed a moment like that because he had amazing games, amazing thing, but not a moment like this. Like, you can think about so many moments that Carmelo Anthony had here like this, the game against Chicago and so many other games or big shots he hit. And Randle obviously hit big shots, but doesn't seem to be a signature moment for him. I think this feels like that moment. He's not a guy who's dropping guys on the floor like Brunson did to Caruso. That's the moment people will remember, when Caruso's sitting on his ass. It's the moment RJ got his buzzer beater against the Celtics. That's the moment people will remember. And Julius absolutely needed a moment like this. I mean, he even got Macri to apologize. Which is the fakest shit. I mean, well, whatever. You're not going into putting frown faces on a guy's poster for a year and then apologizing everything's all right. Mm-hmm. Fuck off.
Mm.
Sorry, teacher.
Defend the man of your ilk.
Omar, just to go on the hands
it's,
up.
Thing. Sorry, it's the wine. It's the wine. Yeah, there you go.
The hands up thing as well, saluting the Knicks fans that are in the arena. It felt like a home game. It was fantastic as well. So I think there's been obviously a major shift in the relationship between Randle and the fans again. You know, obviously fans in general are a fickle bunch. So but it's great to see him kind of connecting with the fans like that as well.
So this is something that Rafa brought up before we recorded, but, you know, Knick fans, for whatever reason, you know, like to take a fun, great moment like that and just take all the air out of it and make it worse. So immediately the narratives after Julius's game winner became like, oh yeah, but was it better? Is it better than RJ's game winner against the Celtics? Is it one of the best game winners that you've seen as a Knick fan or whatever? You know, the immediate rush to compare something that just happened to something from the past. You know, is it matching the Linsanity one in Toronto? Is it like Melo on Easter Sunday? So why do you think we do this? Like, why do we immediately run to do that? Is that just kind of like a bad look by us as a fan base?
I just always think of that you know, why not both GIF, you know, the why can't we just have both, you know, and enjoy both? You know, why does it have to be a competition? Do you know? And just roll my eyes at these things, and it's just I guess some people have just run out of things to say. So run out of things to complain about because we're winning all the time. So they just have to find something, you know.
I mean, it's just to get a conversation started. And since people are so down on RJ right now, let's shit on that moment a little bit more, because ultimately you will end up comparing them. You will just say, RJ was a lucky shot. RJ just threw it up there and hit it. Yeah, he had 0.6 or 0.7 to shoot. Okay. Randall had more time, hit a great shot. I mean, doesn't matter. They're both great shots. They're both wins against good teams. They're both great moments. And to your point, why we do this? Because we don't have enough moments like this for the Knicks. I mean, you mentioned four moments. It's like, do we have any more moments, buzzer beaters or big last second shots in the last 20 years? Do we have more? Alan Houston, I don't know if...
the Alan Houston maybe, against Miami runner. Yeah, that's another one,
I mean, but yeah, it's still... We struggled for relevance for so much. Every moment we have, let's compare them. I mean, compare this team to the team from 2 years ago. Which team was better, this or Melo? Who was better, Randall or Melo? I mean, why? Oh, it's have fun conversations. None of it is fun. To me, none of it is fun. I mean, enjoy what we have now. It's please enjoy it. Big moment, big win. We're cruising right now. Feels like we're cruising. And, I hate those comparisons. I just hate it. I mean, they're nothing.
The one thing that you could say about the Julius one over the RJ one is that at least you had a Mike Breen call. You know, you had Breen on that one. It wasn't a
double bang.
Game. Yeah, you got the double bang.
Double bang.
Yeah, and whereas, you know, the call that RJ had was not a bad call. You know, I know a lot of people dump on the ESPN commentators, but, you know, it was still a pretty good call. But, it's not like a Mike Breen call. You know, that's just...
Yeah, I also mentioned to you earlier about the RJ one that was spoiled a little bit as well, because that was the thumbs down game, wasn't it, as well?
The whole
press thing afterwards was all about Randall, and it was it was just like, can we talk about the RJ shot, please? Do you know, like,
big moment in his career, kind of ruined by that whole narrative and everything. Yep,
and it was such a shame
that didn't help with the fans either. Because look at what Julius did with ruined RJ's moment. It was before, so he didn't know.
Notice how we always seem to see fans pitting those two against one another. You know, you guys ever notice that? He's like, Julius never passes to RJ, or Julius ruined RJ's moment, you know, whatever. But back
that's
to
not
the
true.
But back to this whole thing. Like, if you're a Sixers fan, right? And let's say James Harden hits a shot, you know, to win a game. Are you immediately saying, that was a good shot, but, you know, Allen Iverson had a better one? You know, if LeBron hits a shot as a Laker, are they saying, but Kobe's was better? I don't know, maybe, but probably not, you know, because they're just saying, you know, you're just appreciating the greatness of the player. Like, if Dame hits a shot, are they saying, but I remember when Clyde Drexler hit a better shot? Like, no one fucking cares. You know, it's like, you won the game. That's all that fucking matters, you know? And that's what kills me about it is, like, you know, and you mentioned it already, Rafa, like the whole, like, let's start comparing Julius to Carmelo, you know, and it's like, well, that's just not fair, you know, because his tenure's not even done yet. Like, can we at least let it all play out and enjoy the moment, enjoy this good team? And, you know, to what you guys have both said, it's just not much going on, so let's talk about something, right?
Yeah. Well, I saw one earlier about where does Julius rank as all-time Knicks and things, and all those sorts of arguments going on about
Jesus Christ.
Is he better than...
We're starved. We are so starved for success.
Real quick, I think if he plays out his contract and maybe gets another year or two after that, the amount of records he will have amassed as a Knick is going to create that conversation. Like, he's already up there in three-pointers made, and he's going to be up there, you know, eventually in points more than likely, and rebounds, like, closing in on top 10 of all time. So it's a discussion that's going to be had eventually, but not today. It's not the conversation for now.
It's, to me, it's a conversation, and he can break the records, play out his contract here. But if he doesn't beat what Ewing did here, so what
the thing
he can do to Yeah, yeah, that's it. If he wins the title leading the team, he's the greatest Knick of all. Well, close to. It's hard to say that against a team with Clyde and everything. No one will ever come close to what Clyde represents to the Knicks as a player and as a commentator. Greatest Knick ever, right there, with Clyde. But he can be close to Ewing if he wins the title here.
Let's get into a couple of the younger guys real quick here, guys, before we get out of here. So, Manuel Quickly and Obi Toppin, both coming towards the end of their rookie deals. Both are extension eligible after this year. I'm not sure if either of them will get that huge extension that they're eligible for. I believe it's 5 years, $198 million is that they're both eligible for. The max
one extension. One is closer to getting it than the other.
I guess when we look at these two guys, you know, two guys that are pivotal pieces off the bench right now for this team, locked into the rotation. Is the team looking, do you think, to extend both of them, or are they going to just let them both play out another year before they hit restricted free agency?
Yeah, I think they'll play out. But I mean, obviously, if they can tie down Quickly, he's obviously the priority right now. But I think what happened to RJ and RJ's contract, I think, has gave me a lot of confidence that, you know, they know what they're doing from that side of things. That, you know, we were screaming for RJ to get the max deal on this pod, and then we end up getting them for what I hope to be is a bargain at the end of the day. So, yeah, I mean, I'd see kind of, everybody knows how important Quickly is right now, so you know, hopefully that's a bargaining tactic for him. Do you want to wait another year before you get somebody like that tied down? So I think it's a different conversation for Obi. I don't really know where Obi is at the moment with regards to the front office as to how they see his future. So obviously it's a big deal. I think it was Rosie's first kind of move really as a president. So he's obviously got ties to Obi through agency. So I think it would be a tough one to let him go, but everybody knows, that his path to kind of getting big minutes in the team is pretty blocked at the moment. So yeah, it's a tough situation for him, and I see a lot of people just saying, "Oh, just let him go and let him find his way somewhere else," a little bit like Cam. That could be a thing, but you can't treat it like that. You've got to treat it like a business, and you've just got to get true value for him, maybe that is just to trying to extend him on a reasonable deal. So, if you're OB, you'd obviously want to see some sort of commitment to him and commitment to kind of his future on the team.
Yeah, I think Obi's days are numbered as a Knick. I don't think an extension is coming. If you don't extend him this year, it's just because getting us some time to trade him somewhere else. I don't think, especially with, again, Randall playing it again with this level, there's no chance for him to play with Quickly, Plemini, and Grimes, and RJ in the team, moving to the three spot with Josh Hart as well. Him moving into the three spot, Randall sliding back into the three spot, is not a viable thing. Obi playing the five is, again, not a viable thing to happen, especially how Mitch is so impactful with the in the game. Quickly, tell you what, I'm a little bit concerned with Quickly in the sense of how can we keep him and not paying too much, because there has been a lot of talk about the teams wanting to trade for Quickly, seeing how available he is. And so if he feels he can get, I know he looks like he is having a time of his life with the Knicks, but I don't know if when it comes to contract negotiations with money, I don't know how long he wants to sign while getting less money. Maybe he signs a 2-year deal or something like that. But the but we need to pay a little bit more because he's become so valuable, as you said, Alex. He's becoming so valuable, and well, the league notices it. When you were in the race for a six-man spot, well, other teams notice that. It's not just Knicks fans like, yes, growth. Well, other teams, like a contender, sees, hey, there's some potential there for the, leading our second unit, even start a few games for us. So, again, I mean, I don't know how quickly he is personally. He seems like a very chill, cool guy. I think he looks very content with being with the Knicks right now. But I believe he has the goal to maybe become a starter somewhere or become a better player somewhere else if the Knicks don't get him the money, especially. So I'm a little bit concerned with that. If another team can lure him, especially if tampering is only a second round pick, I would give multiple for second round picks for Emmanuel Quickley if I want to get him or something like that. I mean, yes, I think it's a tough situation for us to be in right now with Emmanuel Quickley. It is rising value.
I'm looking not at so this. I'm looking at this, guys, from a perspective. If I'm Obi, there is no way in hell I've signed any sort of extension with the Knicks, because regardless of being from New York and liking being playing on the team, like, he's got to look out for his future, right? He already entered the league a little bit older. So by the time his rookie deal's up, he's already going to be, you know, into his mid-20s. And, you know, at the end of the day, if Julius Randle keeps on dropping 40-point performances and playing well, you're not going to get more than those 12 to 15 minutes a night. And if you really want an opportunity, then you got to, you know, go elsewhere. And I think we could see him being traded at the deadline next year because it'll be contract year, you know, and he'll be entering the restricted free agency. And, you know, maybe a team goes and rents him, see what they got, and, you know, hopes to, maybe they like him and tries to make him an offer. And they will retain the matching rights because he's restricted. So that's the path I see for Obi. Quickly, to your point, Raf, it's a little bit more delicate. I saw Ian Begley from SNY saying that the team is already kind of planning to make an offer to him this summer, you know, based on what he's seen and what he's heard. And I have no doubt in my mind they want to retain him. The question becomes, of course, if there's a team out there that says, hey, look, we need a new point guard and we think this guy can be it, you know, let's go ahead and, you know, extend him an offer. But I think the Knicks will probably want to retain him a little bit with more haste than they did with somebody like Mitch, just because, you know, they see incredible value in him as like an insurance policy to Brunson and as a dynamic scorer for them off the bench. And again, like we talked about earlier, he's getting a bunch of minutes now. So it's really just about having the title of a starter, right? And does Emmanuel want that? I don't know. I really do think he's happy here. I think he likes his role. He loves his teammates. He has a really good, you know, usage rate, and he's allowed to get his numbers. Again, he might end up being sixth man of the year. I don't think there's much. I can understand the allure of saying, oh, this team, like, let's say James Harden wants out of Philly and they want to sign him as their point guard to play with Tyrese Maxey and, you know, reunite them or something like that, right? You know, I could see the allure if you're him. But, you know, if he really thinks that he likes this foundation and what this team is doing, likes playing with Brunson, likes playing with Randle and Barrett, then, you know, I'm hoping he stays. But I think that's their prime priority right now, right? You know, it has to be, is retaining him as far as the in-house stuff. You know, obviously you're probably going to shed Derrick Rose this offseason and, you know, try and shed Fournier potentially at some point here. But outside of that, your priority should be retaining Quickley.
And Hart.
Oh, yeah. And Hart. Well, Hart, isn't Hart a player option?
Yeah, he has a player option. Yeah. So if he picks up that player option, if he wants to stay here, I mean, if he doesn't want more money, why wouldn't he?
Unless he declines and they already have a deal worked out type thing, which is a possibility.
That's supposedly the rumor. I think that yeah, he's gonna opt out of that to get a longer deal.
Can we make the, well, I don't know if the Fournier's money and I mean, Fournier is getting what, 20 something million. I don't think that's enough to cover the two want, what the Hart and Quickly might want. Derrick Rose is 12, so that 30 might do it, but it's tricky, I think. I mean,
it all depends on what Hart wants,
nice
right?
Spot.
Yeah, it depends what Hart wants, and I think he likes it here. I think I don't want to say encourage him to take a discount, but I think that if it's given a million or two here or there from another team, he might just opt to stay here. And I hope he stays because he's again, we talked about it a bunch. He's a amazing glue guy, still undefeated, with Josh Hart on the floor. So I'm really hoping they retain him, really hoping they retain Quickly, finally rid yourself of the bad moves from a couple years ago with Fournier and Rose, and move on with these newer deals that are going to be better for the team. But
Grimes will also be a situation as well for next year. They can sign
That's
Grimes. What do we want to do with Grimes?
That's
might
the
be
issue when you
deal.
Draft well, man. When you draft, like the Warriors have this problem. Not saying we're the Warriors, but I'm just because they've drafted so many good players. It's hard to the reason they traded Wiseman was because their luxury tax was about to be insane, and I do think Dolan would dip into tax if this team showed that it could get to like a conference final, because you could argue the ends justify the means and playoff ticket sales, but we'll see there. We'll see when we cross that bridge when we get there. But let's get into some game predictions. So as we're recording now, I believe the Knicks just about to tip off against the Celtics. So we have tonight at Boston, then against Charlotte at home, then lighting the beam in Sacramento, and on Saturday night, a visit to LA for the Clippers. So, Alex, what you got this week? What do you think?
Well, I don't think we're going to go 4-0. I'm sorry. I think the streak is going to come to an end. I'm going to go for 2-2. I think just without Brunson tonight, I think we're going to drop that one. Kings are still playing great. Clippers, as we've talked many times, so up and down. The Hornets are absolutely dreadful right now. I mean, obviously they've
no
not
LaMelo.
Got,
he's out for the year.
No LaMelo, obviously no Bridges. Somebody else is missing as well. Can't think right now. But yeah, they've currently got 8 points in the third quarter, with 3 minutes to go. So they get 49 points in total. They're just absolutely, and that's against the Nets as well. So,
defense, man.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true.
They got defenders, guys. Let's not front.
They've got, they've got the second best defender in center in New York as well. I'm gonna go 2-2. I think we're gonna drop another one somewhere. We'll beat the Hornets and beat the Clippers, but we'll finish up 2-2.
Yeah, I was thinking about 2-2 as well. Tonight's game, I mean, we've beaten Boston the last few games twice. The last two games we beat them. So they want to get this win back. And with Brunson out, I think it's unless Randall goes for 60, I don't know if we can win this one, but
we have a big RJ game tonight, Rafa. What do you mean?
The coach being fired as well. Did you see that? Like a lot of Celtics fans want the coach fired.
They're second place in the East.
I know, but they're basically saying the team runs itself, and he's not.
Oh yes, so. Another Nets situation. There you go. Yeah. Team runs itself. We don't need coaches. That's why Dallas suck. I think it's 2-2. I think if we don't beat the Hornets, that's what the fuck. And the Sacramento win. It's Sabonis, so I know Randall is going to give him the business because he hates Sabonis for some reason, and so.
Well, Sabonis is like playing center now, right? Like, they got him playing center.
Yeah. I mean, if Sabonis is their center, Julius Randle will have a field day. That's, well, because there's no other guys
starting at the four. I'm not sure if they're starting Keegan Murray or if they get, they're playing small with Harrison Barnes, but
isn't it Barnes?
Yeah, it's probably Barnes. So, I mean, that's a matchup problem that Julius can exploit for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think we can have a good game against the Kings. Let's see if where I don't know how long Brunson will be out. If he is hurt, rest him. Smash as much as you can. Playoffs are right around the corner.
I mean, yeah, I agree.
Rest him as much as you can. After that bump he took against the Nets, I fainted for a couple of seconds because he looked really hurt, and then he dropped 30 on their heads, like not missing a shot. So oh, he's good. But yeah, man, 2-2. I think
that might be one of those things with Brunson that they just say, look, man, just take a few games, you know, and let's get you right. Because he's the type of guy, he wants to go, you know, he never wants to come out of a game. So,
but I'm just looking at that game the other night where, you know, his ankle twisted twice, do you know, and then he came back in and played fantastic, do you know, just, yeah, so great to see.
Yeah, you love that. You know, you love seeing players that feel that way. I mean, you saw Julius make a comment about it that he plays every game that he can because, you know, he feels like it's cheating, you know, not to play every game. You know, that's the type of stuff the fans love to see, love to hear. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go and make it a clean sweep, say 2-2 as well. I think without Brunson, it's going to be tough to beat the Celtics. And I believe Brown and Tatum both playing tonight. I think they are.
Brown is back. Yeah.
I know Brogdon's out. I know Brogdon's out, and Robert Williams is out. So that might be nice for Mitch. But yeah, I think Charlotte should be a win. They're reeling. They're terrible. And Sacramento, they're playing real well. You know, they look great. And the Clippers have lost 5 in a row, so I think that could be a win. So I'm going to say the wins come against Charlotte and L.A. And hopefully we, you know, maybe we sneak one by Sacramento. You know, who knows? So hopefully they won't be lighting the beam, you know, too much over there in Sacktown. But
so we are all agreeing the streak ends tonight.
We're getting. You know, it'd be nice if it didn't. You know, not to sound negative, and you know, they by far the longest winning streak in the NBA. The second most is like 3. By a couple of teams in the West, so you know, you know, it's streaks are due to end. But you know, one thing to point though, I don't know if you guys saw this, that the last time a Knicks team had 2 8-game winning streaks in the same year was 50 years ago, 1973, under Red Holtzman, when they
won at the end of that season, Nomar.
Yeah, that was a championship season, Alex. So we're not saying that's history repeating itself.
Bring in the comparisons, man. Come on.
Hey, I'm just stating the fact, Rafa. That's the last time it happened, okay? You know, don't shoot the messenger. But, all right, so that is going to wrap us up for this week's episode of the podcast. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at WWKnicksPodcast, where Rafa does a lot of heavy lifting, engaging with all of you great Knicks fans out there. Also, make sure to subscribe to the podcast on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts. So it's Omar, Alex, and Rafa signing out. Worldwide Knicks. See you guys next week.